RadioInfluence.com.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here. Hey, we're your weekly source for performance information. And if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, we like them all. We read them all. We respond to most. But get to us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. You can write to us, email info@CrushPerformance.com. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And if you want to get to the podcast, to our archives, and go way back to all of the great guests and information that we've had on the show over the years, you can go to iTunes, which is now Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher. Just punch in Crush Performance, and they're all there. Okay, so taking a look at the world of high-performance sports, it is evolving at such a rapid pace, it's almost hard to keep up. The amount of research and science coming out of the industry is incredible, but the amount of science and research that's actually being applied to push human performance forward, well, we've never quite seen anything like it in the history of sport. So when we get a chance to look inside of an organization, a high-performance organization that is really trying to retool and master and apply the sciences that we currently have available to us, it's always a fascinating experiment. And so I'm really looking forward to today's conversation with Jonathan Hall, who is the head coach of Triathlon Canada at the National Performance Training Center in Victoria, BC. Jonathan, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. Great to be on.
Yeah, well, we're excited to talk to you. You know, triathlon, it's an interesting sport. This is one of the more challenging sports to train for. You have to be, at the world stage, you have to be very competent in three different disciplines, Jonathan. You know, when we look at this type of a sport and the demands on the athlete, what kind of strategies are you guys using behind the scenes as you get set for a big event like the ITU World Triathlon in Edmonton coming up later in July?
Yeah, I mean, triathlon is an interesting sport to work in because, I mean, it's progressed since becoming an Olympic sport. It was seen as a sport that, you know, people did who couldn't swim, couldn't ride, couldn't run at the world level, so they did triathlon, and it's certainly evolved now that you've got to be, you know, you've got to be racing and competitive at the highest level in each of those three disciplines. And so what we do when we come into a big race like Edmonton is we've had the luxury of having raced there multiple times. It's one of the iconic locations on the ITU stage and has been for a long time. And we look at the course and we kind of try to define what the demands of competition will be. That's the term we use the most, is identifying what is it going to take in that event specifically to achieve, you know, a podium outcome. And we kind of work backwards from there. We look at what the athlete's skill set is. We look at if there is any gaps between what they can do now and what they'll need to do. And then obviously we work on that. And I mean, one of the beauties of working in sport is you find out whether you're close when you get on race day. So we're fortunate this next week we'll be bringing a group of athletes who I think suit, you know, demands of competition. They know what they are. They've trained for them. The challenges on the course meet their strengths. They don't have a lot of weaknesses. And if there's any weaknesses, we've been able to work on them. And that's kind of a simple approach. It's not a complicated approach. It's a complicated process in making it all happen. But having that very clear approach on, you know, how to go about approaching each different race and maximizing our possibilities is quite obvious.
Jonathan, you've had a real interesting experience in the world of triathlon. You've worked with some of the greatest powerhouses in the game, with USA and Australia. Hey, I'd like to go back to your time in Australia, because, you know, what the Australians have done with their population and their investment into sport is a real interesting study in development and in overall sport performance. Maybe tell us a bit about your experience in Australia, because that whole sport model there has been very, very intriguing for years and years.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I've got to admit, I've been very fortunate to work for the federations in Australia and the US and now Canada. And I think that's happened because I've been able to come under some very good leadership. And for me, when I break it down, the leadership that has helped guide the success has been with a single focus, and that is to win. And I was listening to something on the Tour de France this morning, and there was an Australian commentator, you know, joked about, you know, what does it mean to win and what does it mean to finish second? And he spoke quite clearly about it. You know, winning's everything and second is nothing. And that's a very elitist approach. But saying that, that's been the guiding principle. And so when I came to Australia in 2003, I was first engaged. The sports director there, obviously, that was the overriding principle. You know, it's about developing athletes to win and to win at certain events. And those events were Commonwealth Games in 2006 and the Olympic Games in 2008. And I was able just to work under those guidelines. So when it came to making decisions, whether it was, you know, who to support, which coaches to support, which environments to support, the overriding principle was this: we're doing this as a pathway to actually being the best. And it meant that if we weren't the best, we're probably still going to be somewhere on the podium. And so, again, from that clarity was something that provided me, you know, the platform then to come in and do what was an early stage was kind of an advising role, and I got more involved in the hands-on coaching role. And so that kind of trickles down across a lot of the federations. It's not an easy topic because it's certainly not a win-at-all-cost topic, and there's a lot of debate around that mentality of striving to win. But when you're talking about Olympic gold medals and you're talking about winning World Series races, if you're not aiming at that target, then it's very difficult to hit it. And then obviously the caveat below that is doing it in a safe manner, and so nurturing the athletes through that process. And I think that's something that there was definitely a period there between 2003 and probably 2008 where Australia did that very well. They had that balance. They obviously had the talent, they had the desire, they had the plan, and they had the ability to then nurture those athletes and make sure the athletes came through to reach their potential. So it sounds really simple, and obviously what goes on day to day is anything but that. But I think that's the main thing is having that clear plan and that clear focus, and then you go about the day to day work.
We're on with Jonathan Hall, the head coach, Triathlon Canada, National Performance Training Center in British Columbia. Jonathan, you went from Australia to maybe a mecca for athlete development, which is the USA, because the depth chart is deep in virtually every sport, and financially there's resources there that other countries might not have. What was different in the US? I mean, they're a sporting powerhouse, no question about it.
Actually, it's a really interesting point you raise there, because the US is quite a contradiction, and so the perceptions are that the US is a hub of development and it's well resourced financially, and I guess I went into it presuming that, and what I found pretty quickly that wasn't the case. The US has this luxury of huge population, and so just through those weight of numbers, there's athletes that, you know, that rise to the top. What they don't have, and what is frightening still, is that they don't have clear development models. And that was one of my first roles in the US, and why I was recruited to the US was trying to take more of a development pathway or create some developmental strategies to guarantee success, as opposed to saying, well, you know, we've got this population of 330 million, there's going to be some good people out there, let's just wait and see that they rise to the top by themselves. So I guess I came in and tried to put something concrete behind that. And I mean, and other countries are fortunate that it isn't necessarily the natural approach in the US, but what it pointed to me was that having, you know, I guess a systematic approach, having a plan, even without the financial resources, I think there's that given, oh, the US must have a lot of money, but different to Canada and Australia, all sport in the US is private sector funded, whereas obviously sport in Australia and Canada has this huge government state, you know, funding model, which actually at times provides more stability in funding. So I think what it proved to me and what's changed the US's trajectory is that we put some systems in place and we focused on the people. And I've had this cliche that I say, you know, people win medals, not money. And so we just started to put some of those themes, which then obviously lead to clear targets and getting people on board with that. And I said, that's probably one of the big things is it's good to have these ideas. Then you need to get people on board and then you need to deliver. And so, I mean, that's probably been the evolution through working for a leader in Australia who had that kind of mentality, and then working with him and then being successful, taking that into the US and applying the same principles, and now seeing that country be successful with their first ever Olympic gold medal. And I guess now the challenge is, or the reality is trying to do something similar, not exactly the same because each country is culturally different, but do something similar in Canada. And so we have this two-headed approach, which is, you know, we want to win, but we want the athletes healthy. And the challenge is that, and probably the difference with me is I put the healthiness ahead of the winning, but I find if we put the healthiness at the front, we still get to win. If we put the winning at the front and the athletes aren't healthy, not only do we not win, we end up with some, you know, chronically injured and hurt athletes, which obviously puts a huge hole in the system. So it's about creating this kind of global approach to how to go about it, but not compromising in the area and certainly not compromising in athletes' health and well-being.
Yeah, we're talking with Jonathan Hall, the head coach for Triathlon Canada. Jonathan, yeah, that's a real interesting point because, you know, Canada, I think, is fairly famous for its commitment to sports science and especially the long-term athlete development program. And you kind of mentioned the long game, you know, nurturing athletes through the process. Winning's a result of a good system, don't you think?
Oh, I think so. I mean, yeah. I think you can have talented, you can have very talented athletes. And that's what drew me to Canada because there was absolutely no doubt that there was talented athletes in Canada. There was some obviously some gaps in what, you know, my question to myself and why I got involved was it was obviously some gaps that were happening between talented athletes and those athletes reaching their potential. And whether that potential was winning or not is obviously, you know, dictated by who you're competing against. But there was certainly this gap of, say, Canadian athletes not reaching their potential. And so that was what really struck my interest and why I left the US before the Olympics and came up here, because I thought it's going to be a real challenge. It's going to be a puzzle to figure out. But having seen it being done in other countries, it's doable. And that's what we're working towards. And, yeah, words like nurturing, you know, long-term athlete development, you know, long-term planning, they're all words that actually drive what you're trying to do, and they almost act as a bit of a temper so you don't get ahead of yourself, and then also you're trying not to fall behind. So my game here and my approach here has been, you know, I look at Victoria and the National Performance Centre here, and I think we've got talented athletes, and so what I've got to do is I've just got to keep them healthy and uninjured for a period of time through their development so that when it really counts, when we add training, and so what we're doing initially is we're working on the skills, we're working on the fundamentals, knowing that at any stage we can add training, but the training without the fundamentals is going to create a huge gap to fill later. So the process has been keeping them healthy, developing that at a certain trajectory, and seeing where that leads us. And I mean, and that's been one of the most exciting things, is that we've probably done less training than some of these athletes have done in the past. We're still hitting the targets. They're still winning races, which hopefully means we're going to get some longevity. We're going to get some long-term, you know, continuation through those athletes. And so, if you put the athlete at the forefront of every decision you're making, you know, it's not just about the outcome. It's about, well, how does this impact on the person, and how do I keep them healthy and mitigate any risks that they may not be healthy. Again, for me, it becomes a very simple process. And I guess part of my role here at Trican is being creating a mechanism to, you know, share that approach and have coaches come in and share that approach, as opposed to just, you know, people thinking it's about winning, which it is, but it's just this approach to keeping athletes healthy. And so, you know, we've been incredibly fortunate. We've had support from the Edmonton Triathlon Legacy Trust, who bought into that, you know, that philosophy. I think I warned them. I said there's no guarantees that we'll win straight away, but there's, you know, what I really try to guarantee is that, you know, is the safety and health and well-being of our athletes, knowing that those athletes were actually very good, and if we got that piece right, they'd win anyway. So it was kind of quite a cheeky approach. But, you know, that kind of now is putting us in a stage where we're getting ready to host these big events in Canada, knowing that we can put athletes, you know, at the pointy end of the race and moving towards, you know, Edmonton as a World Championship Grand Final in 2020. So there's no short-term fixes, but there's some short-term remedies. But once, I think, I feel now for the, you know, we're really on track to doing something and creating momentum here in Canada.
Oh, no, exciting times. We're talking with Jonathan Hall, the head coach for Triathlon Canada at the National Performance Centre in Victoria. Jonathan, a bunch of really great things you just mentioned there. And I think, you know, one of the really interesting things that's going on in Canada right now since Vancouver 2010 is the trickle-down effect. All the investment and time spent in our high-performance programs is trickling down to grassroots development. And, you know, we're coming out of this peak by Friday sort of society, this mindset that we have to rush to get our young athletes to be as good as they can possibly be. And I think that's where we're seeing a lot of the breakdown, dropout rates, injury rates. So to hear, you know, a message from our top level of sport where, you know, you're taking time, health is number one, and you're nurturing athletes through the system, that's a real strong message to send right down to grassroots development. Because let's face it, triathlon is growing at every level of the sport.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to create that momentum. And I think as the sport grows, it gathers momentum, which leads to further growth. But, I mean, one of the things, again, I've been fortunate is to, you know, take my studies out of sport. And I've been trying to complete my business master's now for 10 years, and I don't know whether I will complete it. But the process has been really important because I've really focused on the human resource side of that part. And when you look at, you know, if you look at the amount of effort and the amount of focus on, you know, human resources in the business and corporate world, it's about developing, but most importantly, retaining your best talent. And so with that mentality as well, it's about identifying. So we, you know, what we're doing here in Victor, we're identifying the athletes that fit a profile that, that points towards they will have potential. And then we're trying to develop them to reach that potential and win races. But we're talking about that retention. And retention in sport is about not being injured. We're not losing them to illness and injury. So it's nice to be able to pull kind of similar philosophies, but from different, you know, from outside the sporting world to try and apply them. And that's just experience that I have in how I'm looking after my athletes. I'm certainly want to develop them, but really what I want to do is I want to retain them through those fragile years when they're completing university, where they're more, there's more potential for them to get injured, both physically and mentally, knowing that if we do that, then we get them out the other side, their legs will do the talking and they'll speak for themselves. And so that's kind of the long-term game for us, is that retention piece, but retention being, you know, maintaining health and well-being.
Jonathan, interesting here to hear your correlation and connection between the business world and sport, because there are a lot of parallels here. Let's face it, it's all about human performance. And a lot of the dialogue that we read around you and your philosophies is about leadership and development, you know, team building, managing, and leading relationships. And that's important, you know, in life in general, but certainly inside of sport. So it's interesting to hear that you're taking sort of that business knowledge and, you know, applying it to sport and vice versa. A real interesting match there. And I think that's an equation for success.
Look, I hope so. I think, you know, the whole relationship piece is critical, because I mean, coaching is a relationship. And for me, relationships with maximizing human performance is about creating that light bulb moment. And I think to do that, you've got to have quite a broad toolkit. And so one term or one analogy or one story may not turn the light on for every athlete. And so therefore you have to have this breadth of kind of experience and stories and anecdotes to kind of turn that light bulb on, that then leads someone who's obviously has the fundamentals potential to reach that maximum performance. And so, again, those principles are very similar, and they are similar across the corporate business world and sport, because that's what leads to success. I think that, you know, the financial part is critical, but the human part is the most critical. And so if we can maximize the human performance, we're going to achieve results. If we can maximize the human performance and increase our funding by having a justified reason to, you know, demand some more funding, then you start to get up to that pointy end where it starts to become easier and you gather that momentum. And I think then the challenge is not to forget what your principles were of where you got there in the first place. And that was one of the things I saw in Australia, was we kind of applied those philosophies, we got the success, and then there was this reluctance. There was this thing, well, we could probably do away with that other stuff now and still be successful. And I think Australia's just gone through this slump where they forgot the reason they were successful. And it wasn't, you know, the winning is the measure of success, but the success was born of these principles and these applications and these values as well. So it's a really interesting process, and it sounds a little bit, you know, holistic and airy-fairy, but it's, in my view, it's very obvious, and it's obvious in the sporting world. It's obviously in the education world, and it's, you know, it's always been a key part of the business world. And you know, you see the fight for people retaining talent. We don't have that fight, luckily, because we, you know, Canadians race for Canada. They're not being poached by other nations, like, as opposed to business. So we have that luxury of not losing our talent to other competitors, but we still don't have that luxury of, you know, being able to waste that talent. So it's exciting times, and I hope, you know, more people can get behind that, and I hope that it proves to be a winning formula in Canada, because it's yet to be tested, and it will be, and then we'll find out whether I was on the mark or not.
Right. Well, Jonathan, we'll be watching with great interest. You know, as we move forward with this program, you're talking about profiling, getting the right people on board and the teams around the athletes. That's really important. You're talking about building the environment, which is critically important. Hey, I wanted to ask you, you know, because one of the areas in sport that's really, really taking off is the area of technology. And I'm thinking that, you know, triathlon, with the way the sport is built, is a sport that's wide open for advances in technology in terms of running shoes in the water, with the swimsuits, and certainly on the road with the bikes.
Yeah, we take that approach. I mean, it's a measured approach, I think. And I had this conversation with my high performance director last week about technology and innovation. And one of the things that we remember is that's the kind of, they're the things that add 4 or 5% at the very pointy end. And I think with Canada, we've got a foot in the innovation and technology place, but we're actually aware that we're yet to really nail the fundamentals, the foundations. And obviously, it's easy to get to the, you know, the sexy stuff, the technology stuff, and the, you know, the right, latest and the greatest, and then neglect the fundamentals. I'm looking forward to getting to that, but we're not quite there yet, because we've got to nail the fundamentals. And the exciting thing I've seen with Canadians athletes, if we nail the fundamentals, they're already very close to the podium, if not on the podium. And so there's this exciting period yet to come that we don't need to jump into too quickly, but it's still, you know, when I look at how many steps we have to go, there's quite a lot. We've still got quite a lot of things to do, but at this stage, we're probably in that fundamentals or reinforcing the fundamentals. And it kind of fits into that long-term development model of, you know, building the skills and then finally mastering the skills. Once the athletes have mastered the skills under pressure repeatedly, then we'll go for that, you know, that kind of icing on the cake, the technology, the innovation, that last little bit. And I think, again, that's where other federations or other sports get it wrong, is they head out to the, you know, the end of the branch through the innovation, and they actually haven't nailed the fundamentals. And so I think that's where the focus is at the moment. But it's exciting to know that if we nail that part, we're going to be very good, and then we still have margin to be even better.
Exciting stuff, Jonathan. Listen, thank you so much for your time today. Fantastic conversation. Hey, we'll look forward to watching the team for years to come, and we'll certainly be watching July 28th and 29th as the ITU hits Edmonton here later in July.
Great. No, it's been great talking to you, and thanks for the support, and looking forward to getting out to Edmonton.
There you go, everybody. Just great stuff. Isn't it great to get a glimpse inside of a high-performance organization that's really trying to fine-tune and retool to provide the best opportunity possible, not just for their high-performance world-class athletes, but also for the younger athletes in the developmental levels who are coming up and will someday challenge for those spots on the world-class team. Just fantastic stuff. I also found it very interesting how Jonathan's background in business is really tying in to the organizations and the strategies he's using in terms of sport performance. We've seen this before on the show with some of our great conversations like Talent is Irrelevant with Jeffrey Colvin, but the crossover between business strategies and sports strategies, there's a great parallel there. It's all about human performance. So great conversation. We have to thank Jonathan for that. And that's the show for today. Coming up next week, we're going to talk more human performance. Listen, the idea of flexibility and range of motion are incredibly important, always have been. But the structured programs we're now seeing at the highest level of sport are very interesting, and they're having a great impact. We're going to talk with Dana Santez, the founder of Mobility Maker and CNN's yoga expert, about her programs and how they're helping people stay healthy, but also how they're impacting performance in the highest level of sport. That's coming up next week on Crush Performance. We'll talk to you then.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.